Good morning. The House will come to order. Please stand if you're able, including folks on the side aisle and in the gallery. Our flag salute this morning will be led by Representative Hannah.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You may be seated. Our opening ceremonies this morning will be presented by Babawage Jakite. And if you look at the spelling of that, it looks nothing like that. But Babawage, as we'll hear more about later, is a guest of Representative Denbrough. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having me here today. My name is Babawage Jakite, and I'm from Mali. Mali is a country in West Africa, but before Mali was a country, it was a great empire whose deeds are still passed down from generation to generation through oral historians. And today, I will be sharing some of their words with you. Before a child is conceived, he does not yet exist. Before a city-state is born, it does not yet exist. Who knows the nature of a child yet to be born 100 years from now? Who knows his name or whether he will be great or small? The secret of his identity and his character will be hidden from us until he appear among the people of the earth. A city-state does not appear through all centuries. The mind of man cannot conceive it because it is not yet perceived with the eyes. The winds blow, the clouds drift, the rains fall, trails through the forest are made and abandoned. Mankind lives on. The hunter hunts, and the farmer tills his field. Blacksmith makes hoes for peace and spears for war. Heroes go from place to place in the hope of proving their courage and honor. It is said that momentous things do not happen every day. But when it happens, it will be talked about for a long time. All things are the same, and then one day it rises in the bush. Stand on the hill or at the edge of the river. Seemingly out of nothing, a house appears, then a village, then a city, perhaps a kingdom or an empire. But let us remember that this empire is not merely a wall surrounding a noisy marketplace. It is made out of families, and every family is a story in itself. Of farmers storing grain, blacksmith forging tools, fishermen learning the secret of the river, and heroes defending the wall, some living on, some passing into night. All things are tied. And they have been brought together in a fragment of time to make the kingdom visible. It thrives, it becomes great, or perhaps it dies away and its walls crumbled and covered again with the grass of the bush. Yet, great kingdoms do not truly die, for they remain alive in the minds of their citizens. It is said, again, that momentous things do not happen every day. Therefore, we tell of them, fathers to son and generation to generation. So, we are here today in this great city, in this great state, in this great country. Will we thrive and remain great, or will our walls crumble and reclaimed by the grass of the bush? Will we make momentous decisions that will benefit generation to generation? The decisions we make here, we make for ourselves, as we are all part of the same family. We are this story. We are farmers. We are factory workers. We are teachers instructing young minds, artists creating, architects designing, and carpenters building. And then we are the heroes defending the wall. After all, if you help build the community in which you live to grow, then you rise along with it. This is not to diminish the difficult decisions we must make. To achieve greatness, we must listen to one another and work together, for one finger alone cannot pick up a stone. May you have the courage, flexibility, and strength to accomplish this difficult task together. As we say in Mali, one cannot have a head and avoid carrying heavy loads on it. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Great to have you here today. Appreciate your words. Courtesies, Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I urge you to extend courtesies and welcome Babawage Jakite and his wife, Rana Neunschwander, who is also with him now on the side aisle. Wage, as you heard, is a native of Mali, of Bamako, Mali, where he met Rana, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, and she lured him back to this country, and we have been the fortunate for it. Wage and Rana are my friends and collaborators on the Cascade Festival of African Films, which has been going on in Portland for nearly 20 years. Wage really embodies the traditional West African figure of a griot, someone who holds in his head the wisdom of centuries that he learned not in kindergarten, but at the feet of his elders as he was growing up, and shares that with, has just shared some of that with us. He shares it with children all over the state, and he shares it also through his art. He's a great ceramic artist. You can see some of his ornamental plates over in the public services building. His plates are widely regarded, and they bring in much of the culture of his native country as well. He also has put those two realms together as an author of children's books. His book, The Magic Gourd, A West African Folktale, was a Library of Congress Africana Book Award honor book. And The Huntsman and the Crocodile was named Coretta Scott King honor book. Those of you who are familiar with the zoo, the Metro Zoo in Portland, will recognize his installations in the African savannah. And you'll find them also if you go to Disney World. His work is shown widely, as is his wife's, Rana Neunschwander. One of her pieces is in the Smithsonian in Washington. And their children now, 16 and 14, Penda and Amina, are up-and-coming creative artists of their own. So I urge you to welcome them. As I said, we in Oregon are much the better for having them here with us. Thank you.
Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Appreciate having you both here. Further courtesies, Representative Krieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope that you'd give courtesy to the House and meet my daughter, Jody. She's the second in a line of four daughters. She is a constituent of Representative Witt, and very proud of her. She has taken care of my son, who has autism, for the past 12 years, my grandson, and has dedicated her life to that. Last Friday, she graduated from Clatsop Community College, and she wants to continue to work with special needs kids, so please take time to come by and say hello. Thank you.
Welcome. Great to have you here. And you got your dad to wear a very snappy tie today. That's looking good, Representative Krieger. Further courtesies, Representative Gelser.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I hope you will join me in extending courtesies of the House to my daughter, Maya Gelser, who has come today to help in my office and be an honorary page. Maya just finished the second grade at Jefferson Elementary School in Corvallis. When she grows up, she might like to be a waitress or president of the United States or a business owner or a doctor or all of the above. So please join me in welcoming Maya. I'm glad you came. Welcome to your House of Representatives.
Welcome, Maya. And you also got your mom very attractively dressed today, too. So good job, Maya. Want to be equal opportunity, both sides of the aisle. Any further courtesies? I don't see our History Minute person. Representative Wingard.
Thank you. Colleagues, today I'd like to introduce to you a group of college students that are participating in a summer research internship program with Cascade Policy Institute. Stefan Berkland is from Wheaton, Illinois. He attends Wheaton College and is studying international relations and hopes to be a political economist. Jonathan Calazani is from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Jonathan attends Reed College and is studying economics and hopes to be an economist. Steve LaFleur is from Toronto, Canada, and attends Wilfrid Laurier University and is currently getting his master's degree in political science. Sarah Ross is from Clamath, Washington, and attends George Washington University. Sarah is currently studying political science and hopes to be a policy analyst. Colleagues, I hope you'll welcome them here to the Capitol today.
Welcome to all of you. Appreciate having you here. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Seeing no further courtesies, the clerk will now open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. We're just waiting for some folks to arrive from the Subcommittee on Education of Ways and Means, so they are slowly making their way up. excuse Representative Kump and Representative Harker. All other members are present. Representative Thompson, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Permission to return to courtesies, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Thompson requests unanimous consent to suspend the rules and return to order of courtesies. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Thompson.
Colleagues in the rear gallery, I have four visitors today from Sheridan Boy Scout Troop. They're here working on their government badges today. Please take a moment to recognize and welcome Travis Duvall, Nathan Butt, Ebenezer Beener, and Nicholas Juarez. If you could please stand. Oh, you are standing. Very good. Thank you very much.
Welcome to all of you. Enjoy your day in the Capitol. Great to have you here. For the courtesies, Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues on the side aisle today joining us to watch a rousing day on the floor are the Politicor Fellows of the Bus Project. These are a group of young people coming together to learn every aspect of the political process, both the grassroots all the way through to how we do business in this building. So I think we should give them a hearty welcome. Thank you.
Welcome to your house. Great to have you here. Enjoy your day. Any further courtesies while we're here? Messages from the Governor. Messages from the Senate. First reading memorials and resolutions. Standing committee reports. The committee report file has been distributed. Special committee reports. The special committee report file has been distributed. Propositions and motions. Representative Clem.
Mr. Speaker, I move to reconsider the vote by which the House failed to concur in Senate amendments to House Bill 3298 and repass the bill.
Representative Clem moves to reconsider the vote by which the House failed to concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3298 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, not a lot of need for debate on my part. Just would encourage members to vote aye.
So further discussion on the motion to reconsider. This is obviously not on the merits of any bill. This is on the motion to reconsider. Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, just an indication of the purpose for the motion. If this motion succeeds, it would be the intent that there would be a subsequent motion to lay this bill on the table.
Further discussion on the motion. Seeing none, Representative Clem, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3298 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Barker votes no. The motion to reconsider, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. In compliance with Mason's Manual of Legislative Procedure, Section 468, Subsection 3, I know you all have that right at your disposal. The question immediately recurs on the motion to concur in the Senate amendments and repass House Bill 3298. Representative Clem.
Mr. Speaker, I move that House Bill 3298 be laid on the table.
Representative Clem moves that House Bill 3298 be laid on the table. A motion to lay on the table is not debatable under our rules. Those who are of the opinion that House Bill 3298 should be laid on the table will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative, actually, he's already voted. The motion to table House Bill 3298, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Further propositions and motions, Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 690.
Representative Bailey moves that the House reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 690. To your motion.
Mr. Speaker, this is an important bill and deserves the consideration of the full body. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion on the motion to reconsider. Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close? He does not. Those of the opinion that the House should reconsider the vote by which it failed to pass Senate Bill 690 will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. The motion, having received the required majority, is declared adopted. Ditto the quotation from Mason's manual. The question immediately recurs on final consideration of Senate Bill 690A. So we're back as though we're in the middle of the debate where we left off. Is there further discussion on this? Is now on the full content of the bill. Discussion on the bill. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this is an important bill, and I would urge an aye vote.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Bailey, do you wish to close?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just very briefly, for those that weren't here yesterday, this is an important bill that is about accountability and ensuring that we are keeping track of those who should be paying taxes to the state. It allows the Department of Information to disclose tax information to certain law enforcement officials, provide additional tax return information to the Oregon Boards of Accountancy to identify and pursue unlicensed and incompetent tax preparers, and allows the Department of Revenue to report to consumer reporting agencies certain information regarding delinquent taxpayers. It's an important bill for the financial health of our state. I urge your aye vote.
Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 690 should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Clem, how do you vote? Clem votes aye. Representative Chris Edwards, how do you vote? That would be an aye. Representative Edwards. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Senate Bill 690A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We remain under propositions and motions. Representative Greenlick, House Bill 2194.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2194 and repass the bill.
Representative Greenlick moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2194 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you. 2194 is a bill we passed that dealt with some technical issues like quorums and things like that in the management of the Oregon Medical Insurance Program, the high-risk pool. The bill went to the Senate. The amendment deleted one sentence that was redundant and caused confusion, but changed nothing in the content of the bill. I recommend an aye vote.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Greenlick does not wish to close. Those are the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2194 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. Representative Kenemer, how do you vote? Kenemer votes aye. Representative Garrett, how do you vote? Garrett votes aye. Representative Kotek votes aye. Representative Roblin, how do you vote?
Aye.
Roblin votes aye. House Bill 2194A having received, House Bill 2194A having received the constitutional majority is declared repassed. We're going to skip over the next one and go to a proposition or motion from Representative Nolan on 2229. Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Good morning, colleagues. I move that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2229 and repass the bill.
Representative Nolan moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2229 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Colleagues, this is the bill that codifies many of the recommendations that the Big Look Task Force brought forward. This bill originally passed out of the House Land Use Committee on a unanimous vote, and it originally passed the floor with 59 yes votes. The Senate has added minor changes to improve the local control, a little friendlier to counties. And it is still a very good bill, and I encourage your support.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nolan, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2229B and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Berger votes no. Representative Beyer, how do you vote? Beyer votes aye. Representative Jefferson Smith, how do you vote? Representative Jefferson Smith votes aye. Representative Hannah, how do you vote? Hannah votes aye. House Bill 2229B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. We are going to skip over 2370, and so our next bill will be 2731. Representative 13, I'm sorry, 13, Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2713 and repass the bill.
Representative Barker moves the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2713 and repass the bill. To your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, this is the so-called Public Safety Officer's Bill of Rights. The Senate amendments clarify that the measure does not affect employees who have similar protections under collective bargaining agreements, allows for preliminary questions that do not trigger the protections. I think this takes care of some of the concerns that were expressed here by the good representative from Salem, Almsville, and Turner. The amendments make the bill better, and it should deserve your aye vote. Thank you.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Barker does not wish to close. Those of the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 2713 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wingard, how do you vote? Wingard votes aye. Representative Jensen votes aye. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Wisnett votes aye. Representative Nolan votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. Representative Berger, how do you vote? Berger votes aye. House Bill 2713B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared repassed. Further, House will stand at ease for a moment. Further propositions and motions, Representative Cowan. 3021.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3021 and repass the bill.
Representative Cowan moves that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3021 and repass the bill. It's your motion.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 3021B was before us before. It provides for coverage under the Oregon Tort Claims Act and workers' compensation for qualified emergency responders as long as they're performing service under the direction of a public body during a state of emergency. The original area of disagreement in committee and on this floor were around the option to provide either workers' compensation coverage or medical insurance to an injured qualified search and rescue volunteer. The amendments that were adopted on the Senate floor resolve that conflict. It requires that all search and rescue volunteers be covered by workers' compensation insurance, but it allows the self-insured counties to use the assigned risk pool to cover their volunteers and allows them to buy coverage per hour of volunteer time. I think that it's a good conclusion to some consternation on this bill, and I urge concurrence.
Is there further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, Representative Cowan does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the House concur in the Senate amendments to House Bill 3021 and repass the bill will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 3021B, having received the required majority, is declared repassed. Representative Nolan, for what purpose are you in the queue?
Mr. Speaker, I ask for a brief recess, 10 minutes, for purposes of a Democratic caucus.
Representative Nolan moves that the House recess for 10 minutes. Representative Hanna, any thoughts about what other folks might do during that time?
being the other folks. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes, Republicans will spend that 10 minutes in caucus as well.
Okay. Representative Berger, on this motion, you're in the queue? Okay. Without objection, the House will stand in recess for 10 minutes. The House will come back to order. The clerk will open the voting system to verify the presence of a quorum. All members are present. We recessed under the order of propositions and motions. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move that House Bill 2343 be withdrawn from the Committee on Ways and Means.
Representative Berger moves that House Bill 2343 be withdrawn from the Committee on Ways and Means. The clerk will read the bill in a short summary.
House Bill 2343 relating to mental incapacitation modifies definition of mentally incapacitated for purposes of certain criminal statutes.
Under our rules, motions to withdraw measures from committee are not debatable. Those of the opinion that House Bill 2343 should be withdrawn from the Committee on Ways and Means will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Cameron, how do you vote? Cameron votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Barker, how do you vote? Representative Barker, off the floor. The motion to withdraw House Bill 2343, having not received the required majority, is declared failed. Further propositions and motions. First reading of House Bills.
House Bill 3507 relating to mandatory workplace communications to employee about employees' opinions.
Bill read for the first time has passed the Speaker's desk for referral. Second reading of House Bills.
House Bill 5004 relating to financial administration of the State Commission on Children and Families, appropriate money, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5014 relating to financial administration of the State Department of Fish and Wildlife, appropriate money, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5022 relating to financial administration of the Department of Justice, appropriate money, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5027 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5032 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Health and Science University, appropriate money, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5040 relating to financial administration of the Public Defense Services Commission, appropriate money, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5049 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and declaring numbers. House Bill 5050 relating to financial administration of the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board, and declaring emergency. House Bill 2073 relating to Oregon Rainy Day Fund. House Bill 2152 relating to economic development, appropriate money, and declaring emergency. House Bill 2557 relating to higher education faculty. House Bill 2571 relating to veterans' educational benefits, and declaring emergency. House Bill 3158 relating to broadband and appropriate money, and declaring an emergency.
Bills read for the second time were passed the third reading calendar. Consent calendar. Third reading of House Bills. The clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 5003 relating to financial administration of the Commission for the Blind, appropriated money, and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5003A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5003 is the budget bill for the Commission for the Blind. The mission of the Commission is to assist blind Oregonians in making informed choices and decisions to achieve full inclusion and integration in society through employment, independent living, and social self-sufficiency. The Commission provides employment counseling, technology services, resources for businesses, training, supported employment programs, public education, and small business opportunities. The Commission is a 7-member board appointed by the governor. The agency's programs are focused on two main objectives, employment and independence. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $15,976,671, which includes $1,513,682 in general fund, $2,534,109 in other funds, and $11,928,880 in federal funds, and 51 positions, which is 47.6 FTE. The approved budget is a 1.7% decrease from the 07-09 legislatively approved budget. The approved budget includes a package to eliminate three positions and reduce the agency's services and supplies and special payment budgets.
Representative Kotek, will you yield for just a minute? Could we have a little bit less volume in the chamber? Thank you. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The approved budget also includes reductions to the agency's general fund budget, including additional reductions in special payments. Federal limitation is added to the Commission's budget to fund the reinstatement of three positions as limited duration that were included in the agency's revenue reduction package. However, the majority of the federal stimulus money received by the Commission is devoted to special payments. Approximately $49,000 in other funds expenditure limitation is added to the Commission's budget to provide the 10% match requirement to receive the federal funding for the older, blind, and independent living programs. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved the agency's existing performance measures. Colleagues, there was some discussion earlier in the session from a comment, I believe, from the governor about the closure of the Commission for the Blind. That has not been on the table this session. I would, however, point into the budget report on the budget note that was passed by the subcommittee in the full. There were two audits performed on the commission that were not exactly glowing. So the budget note, and I will read, says, the Oregon Commission for the Blind is instructed to report to the next meeting of the Interim Joint Committee on Ways and Means or the next meeting of the Emergency Board on its progress in implementing appropriate measures to improve the agency's business practices. In its report, the agency must outline what measures have been taken to resolve the issues raised by the Secretary of State in its May 2009 audit of the Commission and what measures have been taken to improve the agency's performance in assisting its clients in gaining employment. One of their key performance measures on gaining employment was very lackluster. Colleagues, despite all the challenges with the Commission, we urge your support and approval of this budget. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I was one who voted against this in committee after reading the Secretary of State's audit of this commission and found that there had been almost $1.5 million of funds that had been spent in ways that were, let's say, questionable. And their response was, well, that wasn't really the taxpayers' money. But the reality is it's all money that's given to a charity. They have promised that they will do better in the future, that they'll be more concerned about not paying for things that are for their own benefit instead of focusing the money on their mission, which is to help Oregon blind people. And so because of their failure to oversee in a fiduciary manner the funds that were given to them, I was a no vote.
Further discussion, Representative Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Declare a potential conflict of interest.
State your potential conflicts.
I'm a member of a limited liability company that has a contract with the Blind Commission.
So noted for the record. Any further discussion? Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Wish to declare a potential conflict.
State your potential conflicts.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm a member of a limited liability corporation that does contract work for contractors to the Commission on the Blind.
So noted for the record. Seeing no further discussion, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close? She does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. House Bill 5003A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5019, relating to financial administration of the Housing and Community Services Department, appropriating money and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5019A. Representative Gilman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5019 is the budget bill for Oregon Housing and Community Service. The Ways and Means Committee recommends a budget of $2,055,652,653 and an FTE of 147.33. Reductions in the general fund support were made, and homeless and down payment assistance programs totaling $2.6 million. The committee approved an elimination of 15.5 permanent positions in various program areas to balance the agency expenditures within the available revenue. The committee approved adding back three of those positions to the weatherization and energy program and 2009-11 biennium to assist in accounting, database upgrades, reporting, and systems needed to accommodate growth in weatherization and bill payment assistance in the energy and weatherization program. Due to an increase in federal funds, primarily through ARRA, a program package was approved to add 17.6 limited duration FTE and $132.4 million in additional federal fund expenditure limitation. The funds are to be for additional weatherization, low-income bill payment assistance, food assistance, homeless prevention, and volunteer support, and for the redevelopment of blighted and foreclosed properties, tax credit assistance, and support for local service providers. The committee approved additional expenditure limitation in the amount of $15.2 million and 4.53 FTE to reflect the Housing Opportunity Act, House Bill 2436, the positions and added funding for homeless assistance, capacity building, affordable housing are funded through the new $15 fee added to fees pertaining to deeds and mortgage records filed with county clerks. Lastly, the committee approved a policy option package to fund affordable housing preservation using $20 million of lottery funds to finance acquisition of subsidized housing and manufacturing home parks that are in danger of being converted to make market rate housing. The package includes 2.0 limited fund FTE. Ways and Means Committee recommends passage of House Bill 5019 as amended. Happy to answer questions.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Gilman, do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
He does not. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. Clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. House Bill 5019A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5023, relating to financial administration of the Department of Justice and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5023. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5023 ratifies three fee increases implemented by administrative rule by Department of Justice during the 2007 interim. Absent this bill, state law requires that fee increases adopted administratively would be rescinded on July 1, 2009 or upon sine die. The agency increased three fees relating to late charges when a charitable organization fails to file a required report. The late fees range from $20 if the required report is not filed by the due date and extension has not been requested, and $100 if the report is past due more than 16 months after the close of the report year. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5023. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Nathanson, do you wish to close? She does not. Those of the opinion the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? Representative Wisnett, how do you vote? He votes aye. Representative Buckley, off the floor. House Bill 5023, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 5033, relating to financial administration of the State Parks and Recreation Department and declaring an emergency.
Question now arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5033A. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 5033 is the budget bill for the Oregon State Parks and Recreation Department. The Parks and Rec Department manages the state's campgrounds, day use areas, and waysides. In addition, the department operates programs related to ocean shores, scenic rivers, recreational trails, and historic preservation. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means approved a total budget of $203,600.89 FTE. The budget is decreased by $14.4 million from the 2009-2011 essential budget level. The budget reflects realignment of revenues and expenditures to balance the May 2009 lottery fund and other fund fees revenue forecast. Lottery funds are projected to be $19 million lower than the 2009-11 budget essential budget level, and other funds fee revenue is projected to be $17.5 million lower, including revenues from a proposal to increase fees to bring camping and day use fees to market rates. A couple of other highlights from the budget. It reclassifies 14 positions and establishes 4 FTE at no net cost by reducing 4.1 vacant FTE to finance the established positions and reclassifications, addressing position issues following an internal audit initiated by the department during the current biennium. It increases the off-highway all-terrain vehicle safety program by $3.3 million. It transfers $1 million to the Department of Forestry from the OHV ATV account to fund positions dedicated to off-highway all-terrain vehicle trail operation and maintenance in the Tillamook State Forest. The committee reviewed the agency's performance measures and improved continuation of 8 measures, deletion of 7 measures, and replacing 3 of the 7 deleted measures with new measures. The committee recommends, the Joint Ways and Means Committee recommends House Bill 5033 be approved.
Is there further discussion? Representative Wingard.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, good representative. There is a note in there about the day use fee for parks scheduled to be raised next May, and the language that's used is that it will be raised to market rates. Can you give the body some idea of what that, I believe it's a $5 day use fee right now, what we can expect that day use rate fee to be going to for our constituents?
Thank you for the question. The day use fee under package 105, and our able assistant will correct me if I'm wrong, under package 105, the day use fee rises from $3 to $5. And your question, I think, well, I'll let you follow up. That's the increase in the day use fee.
Follow up?
Further questions? Does the carrier yield? I do. He does.
So that is the only fee increase that we're talking about? $5?
No, there are a number of fee increases included in this budget, including the fee increases to RV sites, to tent sites, to yurts, to cabins, to boat moorage, and other activities associated with the park system.
Last follow-up. One more.
One more question. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
So this is the bill that would authorize those fees to increase? Or is this simply the budget for the department?
Thank you. The department has the authority to raise these fees. This budget ratifies those fee increases.
Thank you. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Cannon, do you wish to close? He does not. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 5033A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Clerk, read the next bill.
House Bill 5038, relating to financial administration of the Oregon State Police and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 5038. Representative Shields.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 5038 ratifies three fee increases implemented by administrative rule by the state fire marshal during the 2007 interim. Absent this bill, state law requires that fee increases adopted administratively would be rescinded on July 1, 2009 or upon signee die. The agency increased three fees relating to the fireworks program. Fees are increased for the wholesale fireworks permit, the public display fireworks permit, and the retail fireworks permit. These fees, colleagues, were last raised in 2003, and there was an attempt to raise these fees in 2005, but that effort failed. Without these fee increases, it is likely that the program will have to be further reduced. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 5038. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Shields does not wish to close. Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 5038, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The Chair requests unanimous consent that House Bill 5041A, the next bill on our agenda, House Bill 5041A, be taken from today's third reading calendar and placed on the third reading of House Bill's calendar for Thursday, June 18th, 2009. Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2149, relating to aviation and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2149A. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2149 increases the registration fees for each of the existing nine categories of civil aircraft and creates a tenth category of single-engine fixed-wing turboprop. The fee increases range from $3 to $188 per year. As an aside, aircraft registration fees of $100 or more apply only to aircraft valued at $1 million and above. The Department of Aviation's budget, which is Senate Bill 5504, assumes passage of this bill which is estimated to generate an additional $142,330 in the 2009-11 biennium. These fees support department operations and provide the state match for federal airport improvement program funds. Moreover, the fee increases are supported by the Oregon Airport Management Association. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 2149 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I'm
Representative Jensen, can you yield? Colleagues, could we have a little bit more quiet in the chamber so we can hear the question and the response? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The concern I have is, if I'm on the right bill, and excuse me for that, is the fees on a turboprop single engine. I think that's a 400% increase in that fee. Is that correct?
Is a 300% increase.
Pardon me?
300% increase.
300%.
From $50 to $200.
Okay. And help me on the turboprop twin.
Do you accept this further question, Representative Edwards?
I do.
You do. Do you have enough for the second question?
Would you mind clarifying the second question,
Representative Edwards?
What's the difference in the turboprop twin versus, what type of a percentage increase is that?
Representative Jensen, I believe if you're referring to the multi-engine fixed-wing turboprop...
Yeah, multi-engine, yeah,
okay,
usually.
The fee increases 100% from $100 to $200.
Representative Jensen?
Further questions?
Further questions? The carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I have some difficulty understanding, the arithmetic on this as to why a single-engine turboprop would have this great an increase and a... what would normally be a twin-engine turboprop, the amount of the increase wouldn't be nearly as dramatic.
Thank you for that question, Representative. Based on testimony in committee, the director of the agency specified that the proposed increases are proportional to the commercial value of the aircraft.
Representative Jensen?
Okay. Thank you for the question. No further.
Further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
No.
He does not. Those who are of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. House Bill 2149A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2150, relating to aviation and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2150. Representative David Edwards again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2150 increases initial pilot registration fees from $8 to $12 and renewal fees from $16 to $24. Every pilot operating within Oregon is required to register with the Department of Aviation within 60 days of issuance of any appropriate federal certificate, permit, rating, or license relating to competency as a pilot. The Department of Aviation's budget, which is Senate Bill 5504, assumes passage of this bill, which is estimated to generate an additional $38,315 in the upcoming biennium. These fees support a search and rescue program jointly operated with the Oregon Military Department. The Joint Committee on Ways and Means recommends approval of House Bill 2150 as amended.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Edwards does not wish to close. Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system.
Voting aye is Gelser.
Representative Nolan, how do you vote? Nolan votes aye. Representative Springer, how do you vote? Springer votes aye. House Bill 2150A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2873, relating to public employee retirement and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2873B. Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 2873 has become necessary because of recent action of this body in raising the upper limit of income tax rate, which we did in House Bill 2649. In committee, we had a vetting from Dave Hendricks, our legislative counsel, regarding the history of PERS benefit taxation. It is a long, complex saga of lawsuits and legislative action in response to maybe sort of sometime lawsuits. But to be brief, the upshot is language in statute from 1987, which says that certain PERS retirees are entitled to a multiplier equal to the maximum Oregon personal income tax rate. That's the language. Since we raised the upper limit of personal income tax rate from 9 to 11% in HB 2649, this bill is necessary to make clear that the benefit increase should remain at the 9% level and does not raise the new upper limit, does not rise to the new upper limit income tax rate. We had testimony in committee that the number of PERS employees who are potentially negatively impacted by this change may be as few as five or maybe as many as five or as few as one. They are all very high income, long service PERS employees. This does not impact the general service employee, but if we don't do this, it could have a huge negative impact. I'm happy to answer questions on this, but if you'll note, I have an expert sitting at my desk, so if you want to wade into the weeds, please ask away. I'll be happy to ask him the questions that you may have. Thank you. Also, there was no opposition to this legislation in our committee, and I would urge an aye vote.
Is there further discussion? Seeing none, Mr. Warner is free to go. Do you wish to close?
No, thank you.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Shields, how do you vote? Shields votes aye. Representative Kennemer votes aye. Representative Witt, how do you vote? Witt votes aye. Representative Holvey votes aye. Representative Wingard votes aye. House Bill 2873B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 2990, relating to child caring agencies and appropriating money.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 2998. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. House Bill 2990 comes to us today from the Joint Ways and Means Committee. This bill creates a fund within the Department of Human Services budget made up of fines paid by private child caring agencies for rules violations. Private child caring agencies include private adoption agencies, homeless, runaway and transitional living centers, academic boarding schools, therapeutic boarding schools, day treatment programs, residential care facilities, private foster care agencies, and outdoor youth programs. Essentially, if you want to provide 24/7 care for children in the state, you are a private child caring agency. The fund created by House Bill 2990 will be allocated for the administration of the standards and rules for these facilities. As a result, DHS will be empowered to address issues that may arise within the facilities earlier and more thoroughly, minimizing the current risk created by department understaffing. This bill was inspired by problems reported in the newspaper, in the Oregonian, with the Pendleton Academies and Kirkland Institute. Two institutions who had had months of warnings for abuses before DHS shut them down in December of last year. Problems at these facilities included incorrect medications, physical fights between residents and staff, attacks between residents, and unsupervised mentally ill youth. In addition to the dangers to clients while these issues continued, the closure of the facilities disrupted the services to the residents, their treatment routine, and the peace of mind of families relying upon the residential care. These closures could have been avoided if the problems had been addressed earlier. Perhaps the biggest obstacle to addressing problems like these is the severe understaffing of the Children and Adults and Families Licensing Unit in the Department of Human Services. Currently, DHS has only 2 employees doing oversight for these 237 facilities. These 2 people are responsible for monitoring these child caring agencies throughout the state. The staff is spread so thinly that agencies are inspected by a licensing specialist only once every 2 years, and there is naturally some lack of follow-through on complaints. Colleagues, this is a recipe for danger in private child caring agencies. This bill creates a separate private child caring agencies fund under the Department of Human Services. Any penalties for violations by these facilities would be paid into this fund, and then the monies could be appropriated for the enforcement of rules, but more importantly, training and prevention activities to keep them from happening in the first place. Our interest should be in providing safe care in Oregon's child caring agencies and in providing the stability and continuation of those services. This bill serves that interest. It's a modest first step to providing some additional resources for quality improvement, and I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, House Bill 2990 has great intentions. And what it's trying to do, of course, is say, we have a program here that needs to have money, and so how do we assure that it gets money, because it can't seem to get enough from the general way that we budget using general fund monies. And so it establishes the Private Child Care Agencies Fund. But the problem is that how will we fund it? Well, let's give DHS this power, which they already have, but I mean, they're going to enforce the penalties, and whatever they collect then goes into the fund that's now being created that can be used to help further supervise and investigate those that are paying the penalties. And once again, this kind of forfeiture cycle is not good government. It's not good for the police departments to get to keep the monies from the property that they capture in the course of enforcing their laws, because they have then an inherent conflict of interest to spend more time on those activities that will generate revenue for their departments. That same principle applies here. Although it's a good program and it should be funded, I would say that we should not vote in favor of this bill, because we do not want to perpetuate this kind of inherent conflict of interest. Thank you.
Further discussion, Representative Van Orman.
Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Currently, the department is already in the process of accumulating these fines. Is that correct?
Thank you for the question, Representative. The department does have the ability to levy penalties based on violations. To date, they have not done that. It has not been a practice, but if they were in the future to do that, that's why there's no fiscal on this bill, that those dollars would be deposited in this fund.
Follow-up.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
Yes.
She does.
So essentially, if the department were doing that now, the money would go into the general fund and would not be a set-aside.
That is correct, Representative.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
I would, just briefly. Thank you. I want to thank the good representative from Southern Oregon for his comments. He's been very consistent on making that point, and I really do appreciate it. And I also want to thank the representative from Milwaukee and Southeast Portland, who chaired the House Human Services Committee. We had several hearings on this bill. Originally, when it was introduced, trying to get at how do we find some more sustainable funding for this, the bill actually proposed giving the department the ability to create licensing fees for these 237 agencies across the state. Unlike other providers, these agencies, the statute does not allow the department to charge licensing fees to practice providing residential treatment in the state of Oregon. There was a lot of pushback on that, and what you see before you is the amended version that came out of those discussions in the policy committee. But I do think we need to go back and look at this set of providers and say, what is the best way to provide oversight and technical assistance in a sustainable way Again, this is a modest first step, but there are other issues, and hopefully we can explore them in the sessions ahead. But I urge your aye vote on this bill. Thank you, colleagues.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Roblin, how do you vote? Roblin votes aye. Representative Barton, how do you vote? Barton votes aye. Representative Gelser, how do you vote? Gelser votes aye. House Bill 2990A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3112, relating to taxation of logging equipment and prescribing an effective date.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3112A. Representative Greg Smith, followed by Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, back in the mid-90s, Governor Kitzhaber signed into law a property tax exemption for environmentally sensitive logging equipment. House Bill 3112A will extend that property tax exemption sunset to 2018, and then it will redefine environmentally sensitive logging equipment as that equipment purchased after 1992. Colleagues, there is no fiscal impact to the state of Oregon, and this passed out of your Revenue Committee on a 10-0 vote. I ask for your support.
Co-carrier, Representative Freeman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3112 comes to you with a unanimous two-pass recommendation from the House Committee on Revenue. I wanted to take just a quick minute to thank the Speaker for signing on as a chief co-sponsor. It's much appreciated. This bill extends the exemption of logging equipment for personal property taxes. The exemption gives logging equipment the same consideration that farming equipment has had for decades. These family-owned logging businesses are vital in our communities, much more than local economies that to collect personal property taxes on logging equipment could ever do. So understand, the idea is that if we don't exempt this property, these logging pieces of equipment, these yarders and whatnot, there will be a little bit of personal property tax collected on them, but these companies are going to have to sell this equipment, not provide jobs, and not help the community in a way that's much more important. Knowing that this property tax exemption will be extended will allow these companies, these very small and very struggling companies, to continue to try to weather the storm of what's occurring in our communities right now around forest products. This industry has large gross proceeds. Lots of money comes in, they make very little of it. The margins are at times upside down. A lot of times they operate in the red just to continue trying to work this equipment. This bill will extend what has proven to be a very successful program initiated nearly a decade ago. Colleagues, this is an important bill for my district and for many districts around the state. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion. Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, I want to begin by thanking the good representative from the Hundred Valleys of the Umpqua for his work on the bill and for his kind hospitality in his district. Over the summer, I had a chance to visit with him several facilities and a facility and a mill in his district and see the technological advancements that have been made in those mills. It is a remarkable experience, and I urge you to do the same if you are so inclined. This bill doesn't change what tools will be used in the practice of logging, and it doesn't say where logging should occur or when it should occur. What it does say is that for this industry that is struggling, that we ought to have some relief on the equipment, the taxation of the equipment that is used. Whether it is a bike shop in my district or logging equipment in the district of the representative from Hundred Valleys of the Umpqua, there is an agreement amongst both liberal and conservative economists that taxation of equipment used in production is distortionary because it falls both on the sticky capital investment as well as on the people that are hired to use that equipment. This bill takes a small step forward in rectifying that situation. It's a good bill. I urge your aye vote.
Further discussion, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In earlier bills that we heard this year, and I'm thinking particularly of some resolutions we sent to Congress, it became apparent in the hearings that if we are to use our greatest natural resource, our forests, as an attempt to sink more carbon from the atmosphere, we have to have healthy forests that are properly managed. Healthy forests that are properly managed includes thinning and logging. In order to do thinning and logging, you have to have logging equipment. Right now, we have a kind of situation in which the people with that equipment who want to keep it, who want to use it, are hanging on by their fingernails because of the economy, because of the price of wood, and of course, the ongoing failure of the federal government to adequately manage its forests, which I think is a huge shame for this country and a huge problem for Oregon because of the fact that, that many of these forests are located in Oregon and I might add in my county, Blaine County. This is an important bill. It has a small impact on county and other property tax receiving entities' income, but it has a very important impact on the businesses that are trying to maintain equipment. We have already lost in this state the capacity to do many of the kinds of things that are necessary in order to manage healthy forests. This bill helps us to save some things that we have not yet lost. I urge an aye vote. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill, please.
To the bill.
I'm very grateful for this bill because earlier I was not in a very good mood, and this bill makes me very happy. I would submit you that all logging equipment is pro-environment because it does just the things that the good chair of the Revenue Committee pointed out. Our federal government does not manage the forest. We do a better job. I believe we could do more. I just hope, pray that this is too little. I hope it's not too little, too late. And when we talk about the mismanagement of natural resources in this country, it ain't them folks that are to blame. It's us. Because we need to speak up in a louder and clearer voice and make it very clear to our federal delegation that this is our land and our workers need jobs. And I don't like the argument that just because that the wood fiber industry is failing because of a market. Yes, the market's down. It'll come back. The reason the wood fiber industry is struggling in this state is our fault, not someone else's fault. And we need to do more, and this is one tiny, tiny little token attempt at helping the good people that are working in the forest. And I promise you, no one cares more about that, the health of that forest than the men and the women and the families that own and work in those forests. I've taken my daughter out onto these logging operations, and I've seen the changes that they've made. We have that picture up there in the House lounge that shows a team dragging a log down a trail, dust flying all over the place. That's what many of the people that live in concrete jungles in this state believe that's how we still log. They're the very same people that got asphalt roofs, wood-framed house, sheetrock walls, aggregate concrete foundations. They turn on the tap and clean water comes out and they flush the toilet after these wood fiber products to clean themselves up, and then they want to shut all that stuff off. Well, I'm sick of that. This is a good bill. Here's your aye vote.
Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question to the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield? He does.
I do, Mr. Speaker.
I apologize for not getting these questions to you earlier, good representative, but could you give me the definition of environmentally sensitive logging equipment?
Thank you. The definition of environmentally sensitive logging equipment can be found on section 1. On line 10, it says, environmentally sensitive logging equipment means logging equipment that was originally manufactured after 1992.
Further question?
Further questions? The carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
From where did that definition come?
It is my understanding that that date has been in statute from its origination, and we're continuing to keep that date.
Representative
Further
Tomei.
Question to the carrier?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
If I understand my history correctly, good representative, the legislature first passed that legislation in 1999. Is that correct?
That is my understanding.
Representative Tomei.
Further question to the carrier?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
So if I understand my arithmetic correctly, then that would have applied to equipment that was manufactured 7 years before that. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Further question to the carrier?
Further question, does the carrier yield?
I do.
So if this exemption goes through 2026, then that the implication is that there will be no equipment manufactured after 1992 that was more environmentally sensitive. Would you make that assumption?
Well, first, Mr. Speaker, first of all, let me clarify that this does not go through that date. It goes to 2018. It extends it an additional 6 years.
If I'm reading your further question to the carrier.
It may be helpful just to clarify for the whole House that we're all looking off the A and gross version of House Bill 3112.
And if I'm looking at something from the good representative from Roseburg, support for House Bill 3112, and it says the exemption will go through 2026, am I reading something inappropriate?
Yes. Mr. Speaker, this bill has been amended in committee as a compromise. The original language was 2026. However, that has been amended to read 2018.
2018.
Representative Tomei.
So it seems that the original intent of further question.
Does the carrier yield?
I do, Mr. Speaker.
He does.
It seems that the original intent of the tax break, that would have been in 1999, was to encourage logging businesses, timber harvest businesses, to upgrade their equipment rather than to keep on using equipment that might be outmoded. How would you respond to that, Representative?
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, I did not serve in the legislature in 1999, so I do not know that intent. What I do know is the intent of this legislation is to provide economic relief to those folks in the timber industry who have assets that have debt on them, that have obligations attached to them, but unfortunately are not generating cash and are not able to meet their property tax obligations.
Thank you, Representative. To the bill?
To the bill, Representative Tomei.
Colleagues, I can appreciate the intent of this legislation, and certainly all the speakers have so far have supported it, and I understand that, and I certainly want to support this industry and the people who work in this industry. But I have some questions about using the term environmentally sensitive equipment to merely extend a tax break on equipment that obviously is not environmentally sensitive. So I will be a no vote on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion, Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, for the most part, I would have complete agreement with the carrier of the bill and the folks who have spoken in favor of the bill. I'd have a little bit of question with the good chair of the Revenue Committee when he talked about the forest being our most important natural resource. I think I could make a fair argument that water might be our most important natural resource, without which forests would not exist, of course. But without wanting to get into a debate with my good friend who chairs that committee, and who is always willing and ready and very effective at debate, I will pass on that and move on to my major concern with or things to say. I am urging you to vote for this bill. It is a good bill. It is a very, very little piece in the picture. And I do appreciate the comments that have been made on the part of some people, on part of one of the speakers, that that probably the national forests have not been managed in the way that they should have been. And part of, I think, what's being said with that on the way they should have been is there could have been quite a bit of harvest of trees and timber in the national forest, which would have left them considerably less at risk as far as fires are concerned. And fires, are a major problem for us in the state of Oregon. But I wanted to leave, when we talk about the environmental, friendly equipment, and we talk about our forests, one thing comes to my mind, and that is, did you realize that Oregon is the number one state in the nation, for having harvestable timber, trees? Did you also realize that Oregon, for its domestic use, its domestic purposes, is a net importer of timber, a net importer of timber from those countries that pay little or no attention to the environment? To me, I'm sorry, but it just strikes me as being a little bit hypocritical to have to buy timber from countries that are raping the environment when we have the timber in our state. And because of some of the overextended environmental issues, are not logging it, not cutting timber, not making 2x4s and so forth for our construction business. Just a thought. I urge your aye vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Cannon.
Speaker, to the bill.
To the bill.
First, a brief preface. I believe logging and logging equipment can be pro-environment as well as pro-jobs. It depends on how and where it's used, but I want to make that clear. It appears that the original purpose of this property tax exemption was to create environmental incentives for upgrading logging equipment, as my colleague behind me suggested, and the underlying language of this bill, unamended, said that the statute said that you would get this property tax exemption as long as you purchased the equipment within the last 8 years. This changes that to say that you get the exemption on any equipment purchased since 1992, and that becomes the definition of environmentally sensitive logging equipment. I haven't heard good explanation here on the floor as to why any equipment purchased since 1992 would in and of itself be environmentally sensitive. I hope there's some effort made during the interim to revisit this issue, consider what environmentally sensitive logging equipment is, if the purpose of this credit, of this exemption is to create incentives and create business for the logging community, then perhaps we do that under a different name, not environmentally sensitive if that's not, in fact, the purpose. For those reasons, it'll be sort of a mild no vote on this bill.
Further discussion, Representative Riley.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, most of you know that I'm very careful with tax credits. And I hope that we don't need this one for very much longer, because I hope that the industry that we're giving this tax credit to makes a big comeback in this state, and we don't need this tax credit anymore. But for now, I believe we do need this tax credit, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Greg Smith, do you wish to close?
Just very quickly, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, I appreciate your attention on House Bill 3112A. I just want to bring two points to light. One is, as we talk about those folks who harvest timber, I want to make sure we all understand here, the very, very best stewards of the land are those folks who are working that land. These are hardworking, honest men and women who are doing their very best to make sure that that industry thrives, not just today, but for tomorrow and for generations to come. I want to be very clear on that point. Second, I want to be very clear on the point that the assets that we're referring to are assets that are sitting idle. And for many, many small business owners, again, hardworking, honest men and women, these are assets that are not generating cash. But for House Bill 3112A would have to begin paying property tax on them. Colleagues, rural Oregon's struggling. Folks are hurting back there. For many of you, House Bill 3112A is just a small little piece of legislation. For me, it's huge. It's huge. The men and women in Wallowa County and Union County and Umatilla County and Morrow County are dependent upon this bill. Thank you for your consideration.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Dembrough, how do you vote? Dembrough votes no. Representative Galizio, how do you vote? Galizio votes no. Representative Widener, how do you vote?
Aye.
Widener votes aye. House Bill 3112A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the next bill. And colleagues, our intent is to just finish up the House bill calendar, not to do the Senate bills, but we are going to finish up the House bills. Clerk will read the next bill.
House Bill 3114 relating to psychotropic medications for children in foster care.
The question arises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3114A. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, House Bill 3114A comes to you today from both the Joint Ways and Means Committee and the House Human Services Committee on unanimous votes. I'm proud to carry this bill today because I believe it's prudent policy that will benefit the children in our foster care system. And colleagues, the children and youth in our foster care system are our children. They're under our care and our protection, and I believe this is a very important bill, so I hope you will give me a few moments to explain it to you. House Bill 3114 requires a mental health assessment by an appropriately licensed mental health professional before a psychotropic medication is prescribed to a child in foster care. Currently, these children are supposed to receive an assessment within 60 days of being placed in care. Yet between fall of 2006 and 2007, less than a quarter of the children placed in substitute care were given a mental health assessment during this time. Only 34% received an assessment within 120 days, compared to more than half who received a physical health assessment. This bill will improve the rates of assessment overall and will ensure that kids aren't medicated without a fresh diagnosis. There is an exception for emergency situations so the department can react as necessary to urgent medical needs. Secondly, this bill requires an annual case review by a person with prescriptive authority who is not the prescriber if a child has more than two prescriptions for psychotropic medications or is under the age of six. And yes, colleagues, we have children in foster care under the age of six who have been prescribed psychotropic medications. An estimated 21% of children in foster care are prescribed at least one psychotropic medication, including 17% of foster children under the age of four. 17% of foster children under the age of four have been prescribed at least one psychotropic medication. These rates are three times higher than medication of non-foster children and seven times higher for atypical antipsychotic use. Foster children are also three times more likely than non-foster children to use three or more psychotropics or more than one psychotropic class at the same time. Oregon should not be part of the problem of over-medication anymore. When we provide regular reviews of prescriptions, we are better able to end unnecessary medication, transfer to more effective drugs, and prevent dangerous drug interactions. This is an issue not only for the safety of foster children, but also the effectiveness of the programs that we provide for these children, some of the most vulnerable children in our state. Finally, House Bill 3114 requires that all psychotropic medication is age-appropriate and used for a medically accepted indication based on a slate of scientifically accepted sources. This is just common sense. Our kids should not be given medication that isn't known to cure the problem. Colleagues, the world is hard enough on foster kids already. When 54% of foster children in Oregon have at least one psychiatric diagnosis, it is even more important that we protect them from over-medication. This bill provides a safer structure for the prescription of psychotropic medication for foster care youth. It's a good bill, and I urge your aye vote. Thank you very much.
Further discussion, Representative Chris Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
She does.
Thank you, Representative. And I really do apologize for not getting you this question in advance. There are some foster children that live in my neighborhood that spend a lot of time playing with my son, and I believe that some of them would be affected by this bill, and so I decided to take a second look at it. And what I'm wondering is if DHS doesn't have the funding to do these mental health assessments prior to issuing a prescription for psychotropic medication, then would they be prevented from getting a prescription? If funding is an issue, I mean, that's what I'm concerned about.
Thank you, Representative. I appreciate the question. This bill did take a ride through Ways and Means because we wanted to be sure that what we were doing here was able to be funded. This is trying to put into statute current practice. There's been a lot of movement within the department to improve their policies and procedures on this particular issue. When you enter foster care, a child is covered by the Oregon Health Plan. So some of the prescribing already happens by the primary care provider. What we're trying to say is let's make sure that a complementary mental health assessment, also currently provided for children through capitation through the Oregon Health Plan, is also happening. So the funding is there, although we understand that if this does increase the caseloads, the mental health providers and the primary care providers will need to come back in the next session to talk about that. But right now, these children should be on the health plan. They should be receiving assessments and the prescriptions through their primary care providers or a mental health professional. But thank you for the question.
Thank you.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Kotek, do you wish to close?
Just briefly, and thank you for the indulgence here, I want to thank my legislative assistant, Tiffany Ryder, for all her hard work on this bill, and it also happens to be her 30th birthday, so I urge your aye vote. This would be a great gift for her. Thank you.
Those of the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Gilliam, how do you vote?
Aye.
Gilliam votes aye. Representative Wingard votes aye. House Bill 3114A, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. The clerk will read the last bill of the day.
House Bill 3300, relating to the green economy and declaring an emergency.
The question now rises upon third reading and final passage of House Bill 3300. Representative David Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Colleagues, today I'm pleased to present House Bill 3300, a green jobs initiative designed to help ensure emerging and established businesses have the trained workers they need to grow and prosper. House Bill 3300 will not only put Oregonians to work, but enhance the environment for generations to come. Most green jobs are middle-skilled jobs that require more education than high school, but less than a four-year degree. These family wage jobs are well within reach of lower-skilled and low-income workers as long as they receive effective training. With Oregon's unemployment rate at a 26-year high, it is critical we have a coordinated strategy to better match training opportunities for low-income Oregonians with high-wage, high-demand professions in the green economy. We need to identify the specific skills the green economy demands, and then we need to invest in creating new training programs and retooling existing ones based on industry needs. House Bill 3300 requires the Oregon Workforce Investment Board develop a green jobs workforce plan that does just that. More specifically, the bill asks the board to work with industry, labor, and education stakeholders, as well as low-income advocacy groups to identify emerging technologies and innovations likely to advance the green economy, develop a plan designed to leverage and align existing public programs to train and support green-collar workers, and in conjunction with the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, formulate and recommend new or expanded financial incentives or other strategies designed to recruit, retain, or expand green economy businesses. The precarious state of our economy demands swift action. The bill stipulates the board must submit its completed plan for review and approval by the state legislature no later than January 14, 2010. During the interim, frequent progress reports will be submitted to the relevant House and Senate policy committees to ensure immediate and continuous progress in putting Oregonians to work in green jobs with a future. With this focus, we can make Oregon's economy stronger and make our state greener at the same time. I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3300.
Further discussion, Representative Shoffler.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The bill, please.
To the bill.
That's a good bill. Should pass. Urge your aye vote. This word green gets thrown around a lot out here. We just had a green bill, my humble opinion. Some may not agree with that. But I ask you, what is green? Is Grand Coulee Dam a green project? It's emission-free. I would submit to you, it is. Some say not. Is a wind farm within sight of the protected gorge, is that a green project? And the transmission lines that go with it, is that green? Is putting a wave energy project out in the ocean that those fortunate people who own a beach cabin can see from their cabin, is that a green project and the transmission lines that go with it? Well, I'd submit to you it is. There's a lot of self-appointed environmentalists out here who are getting in the way of everything we try to do to generate energy in this state, to grow crops in this state, to harvest and mill lumber in this state and develop water in this state, and to incent and encourage and attract industry to this state. These projects are going to be built in a manufacturing plant. And I want to point out, they're not green. They're going to be blue-collar workers manufacturing these products. And I don't want somebody shutting down their joint up in Washington, laying off union people, and coming down here and hiring non-union people. That infuriates me, and it's happening right now. So there's a lot going on here, but I just think this word green's been thrown around a lot, and it irritates me. Good bill should pass or drive vote.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in continuing the theme of trips I took this summer, I had the opportunity to tour a manufacturing business in Oregon that makes renewable energy devices and public transportation vehicles, and it is, to the representative from Happy Valley's point, a union operation as well, and ask them, what is the number one thing your business needs to compete? And they said, a trained and qualified workforce. We need more welders. In this context, colleagues, that's a green job. This is an important bill. It gives the skills and the training necessary for Oregon to compete in an industry in which we are naturally competitive, and I urge your aye vote. And, Mr. Speaker, I do need to declare a possible conflict of interest.
State your possible conflict.
I am employed by a company that is currently pursuing a proposal related to this bill.
So noted for the record. Representative Wingard.
Question to the carrier.
Question to the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. A couple of questions for you. Would a logger in the state of Oregon be defined under this bill as a green job?
Thank you for that question, Representative. Statutorily, green jobs are defined as jobs in industries that focus on energy efficiency, renewable energy, and improving the natural environment. So depending on the logger's job, they would indeed qualify.
Follow up.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Would mill workers who are using wood products be considered green jobs?
Thank you, Representative. Provided that those jobs are enhancing the natural environment, they would indeed fall under this statute.
Follow up.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield? Carrier yield further?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Would contractors who use lumber products to build things, would they be considered green jobs?
Again, if those jobs are involved improving the natural environment, they would indeed fall under the statute.
Further follow-up.
Further questions? The carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Would workers at hydroelectric dams be considered green jobs?
Given that the definition refers to folks who work in the renewable energy industry, I believe they would.
Follow-up.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you, Representative. Would nuclear engineers be considered green jobs?
Insofar as nuclear energy is a renewable energy source, those folks would indeed fall under the statute.
Great. Follow-up.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Would waste recyclers, good representative, be considered a green job?
Again, provided that those jobs involve energy efficiency or renewable energy, they would indeed fall under the statute.
Representative Wingard.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Further questions? Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Farmers growing food, ethanol, for instance, or biomass, or ranchers whose manure is being used to produce energy, would they also be considered green jobs?
Insofar as they're involved in the renewable energy industry, I believe they would fall under this statute. I should add also, and perhaps as a way to short-circuit this line of questioning, the Employment Department is engaged in a statewide study to identify green jobs. This, in fact, will be the second study in the country following Washington State's lead. That study is due to be completed on June 30th. The purpose of that study is to identify green jobs and where likely growth is likely to take place so that we can better match training opportunities to anticipated growth in high-wage, high-demand professions in the industry.
Final question.
Further questions? The carrier yield.
I do.
He does.
Good Representative, would fish farmers be considered green jobs?
Again, insofar as fish farmers would be defined as jobs that are improving the natural environment, they would indeed fall under the statute.
Representative Wingard.
To the bill.
To the bill.
I thank the Representative for his patience and for those answers and for the heads up that this definition is coming. I know myself and many of my colleagues will be eagerly waiting to see how green jobs are defined in the state of Oregon.
Further discussion, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, in 2007, Speaker Merkley assigned me as one of the two House representatives to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. And assuming that our current speaker doesn't have a change of heart, I will continue serving in that position on the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. In the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development the other day, when we were talking about this bill, I assured my good friend from Happy Valley, as the representative on this work board, first, I would work to make sure that they were red, white, and blue jobs, family wage jobs. After that, we can shade them any color green that people want them to be. But I assured him I would do my best to make sure that my good friend from Wilsonville gets all of those articulated into the final outcome of this proposal. Thank you.
Representative Barker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill. I rise in support of this bill, colleagues. Benson High School in Portland, which was once producing generations of blue-collar workers as well as college-bound engineers, has essentially collapsed on itself over educational policy changes over the years. At the current time, there's a group trying to resurrect Benson, get it back to the high school it once was by primarily training people for the new green energy industry. And this bill, I would hope, would help that effort. Thank you.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Question of the carrier?
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
Thank you. You stated that hydroelectric workers would be considered green jobs because they work in a renewable industry. But last session, we passed a bill, RPS standards, renewable portfolio standard, that declared that hydro was not renewable. Can you clarify that status for me?
Thank you for that question, Representative. As you may recall, the renewable portfolio standard was designed to encourage the development of new renewable energy sources. It did not necessarily identify hydropower as a non-renewable energy source.
Representative Maurer.
To the bill.
To the bill.
I wonder if the, you know, if we have to have a percentage of time worked in a green job in order to be declared a green job. So the guy that operates the D9 cat that levels the pad for the wind turbine on Tuesday is determined to be a green job because he's providing a service for a renewable energy source. But the next day, the D9 cat's clearing the road for a logging unit, which may not be declared renewable. And so is there a percentage of time spent doing, quote, green work versus non-green work that is a standard threshold? I think this is a bill that, quite frankly, is questionable in its merits, questionable in its funding source, the governor's office. And I think we need to ask ourselves, if we're going to be green, what does that really mean, and what is the true benefit of it?
Representative Greenlick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question of the carrier.
Question of the carrier. Does the carrier yield?
I do.
He does.
I was very much in favor of this bill until I got completely confused by the colloquy between you and the representative from Wilsonville. And it sounds to me like you put statements of legislative intent on the record guiding what might be considered green jobs, when I thought many of the things that were asked of you could only be green jobs in the very narrowest of constructions. And I think you put that construction in place, but could you clarify for me what the legislative intent is this in terms of essentially creating every job in the state a green job?
Thank you for that question, Representative. I used the statutorily defined definition of green jobs in my response, and if you recall, I nuanced my response to indicate that insofar as those jobs fell within that statutorily defined definition, then they would be under this bill. Again, green jobs are defined primarily as jobs in industries that focus on energy efficiency, renewable energy, and improving the natural environment. I will say that if the Oregon Employment Department's study returns findings that are anything like those of Washington State, we'll determine that most green jobs are existing jobs in industries making the transition to a clean energy economy. Those would be jobs involving installation of solar panels, retrofitting buildings to make them more efficient, constructing transit lines, erecting wind farms, repairing hybrid cars, building green rooftops, planting trees, and the like. So many of these jobs are jobs that exist today but simply require additional training for folks to make the transition from a traditional economy to a green economy. And the purpose of this bill, again, is to ensure that we align and best tool our training opportunities to ensure that folks can take advantage of those opportunities going forward.
Further discussion. Representative Richardson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the bill.
To the bill.
Colleagues, motherhood, apple pie, and green jobs. I mean, who could be against any of these, right? And that's what this bill kind of is about. If you listen to the discussion, green jobs can be anything as long as they're good. Good for us and good for society and good for our homes and our families and our communities and our state. By golly, we're for green jobs, right? Well, but the question is, it's not just about low-paying green jobs. What we really want in this state is greater productivity and an economy that promotes the availability of jobs, that they'll flourish. And the truth is that companies respond quicker to the natural demands of the economy, of consumers, where there are natural incentives to put your money and your capital and expand your businesses and hire more people because you have the natural incentives of consumer demand and the natural constraints of bad products that don't sell or services that are no longer needed. So what this bill really does is kind of make a statement that Oregon stands for green jobs. And what we really need to be doing is focusing on how can we make our economy open and honest and transparent and productive so that we will get greater capital investment by employers, that we will attract businesses to Oregon because they want the type of workforce that we can provide because of the money that we're putting into our community colleges and other sources of education, training, the workforce that can provide the support for a successful business that wants to grow and develop. I'm not in favor of this bill, not because I don't love motherhood and apple pie and green jobs, but because I think that we need to be focusing on making Oregon the kind of state that will naturally develop the incentives for a successful economy. So I would say let's vote no on this bill, and let's focus not on motherhood, apple pie, or green jobs, but on a productive economy. Thank you.
Everyone that is in the queue having spoken for the first time, round two, Representative Wingard.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just want to respond and thank the good representative from Tualatin County to the bill for clarifying the answers to my questions, which I believe have become clear upon that exchange between the two of you. So what you have heard, colleagues, is that it is very likely that in the end, when the definition comes down, that loggers who replant their trees are not going to be considered green jobs. Mill workers using wood products in this state, making products from a renewable resource, timber, will not be considered green jobs. Workers at hydroelectric dams will not be considered green jobs. Nuclear engineers and the workers at nuclear power plants, waste recyclers, contractors building with lumber, farmers who are producing either ethanol or other biofuels, ranchers who may be shipping their manure or byproducts like that off for other purposes, fish farmers, and all the rest, not green jobs. Colleagues, as of this month, over 130,000 more Oregonians are unemployed than a year ago. I would submit that they really don't care, most of them, whether it's a green job. They'd like a job. And I am disappointed that in the 6 months that we've been in session, we've done very little, precious little, to address that need. Vote no.
Seeing no further discussion, Representative Edwards, do you wish to close?
Briefly, Mr. Speaker. Firstly, to the Representative Wilsonville's notion that the definition is would automatically disclude or preclude the types of jobs that he asked me about earlier, I think it's premature to draw conclusions about what constitutes a green job. The point of this legislation, in part, is to follow on the survey currently being conducted by the Oregon Employment Department, and at the end of that survey, which will be completed at the end of this month, we will know, we'll have a finer understanding of the definition. To the representative from Southern Oregon's comments, this bill is more than a mere statement that we support green jobs. It actually addresses two potential impediments to the growth of green industry jobs in this state, and a recent study actually shows that Oregon, with 1% of its workforce engaged in the green economy, has the largest percentage of largest percentage of residents employed in the green jobs industry. This bill addresses workforce issues and competition from other states for these same types of jobs by identifying green industries with growth potential and identifying the types and skill sets of the workers those industries need. In addition, the bill asks the Economic and Community Development Department to review the state's existing strategies for attracting and promoting green industry job growth and making recommendations if changes are needed to make Oregon more competitive in attracting those jobs. So with that, I'll also note that the bill will also help Oregon compete for and hopefully win some of the estimated $37 billion in competitive grants provided by the federal stimulus bill. With that, I urge your aye vote on House Bill 3300.
Those who have the opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. As we wait for some people to come back out of committee. House will stand at ease. Representative Olson, you don't need to stand at attention. You may stand at ease. Now, those who are opinion that the bill should pass will vote aye. Those opposed, no. The clerk will open the voting system. Representative Holvey, how do you vote? Holvey votes aye. House Bill 3300B, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. Final reading, memorials and resolutions. Bills, reports, and other business lying on the table. First reading of Senate bills. Second reading of Senate bills.
Senate Bill 596 relating to Deacon Brennany Diphriel Ether.
Bill read for the second time is passed to the third reading calendar. Third reading of Senate bills. The chair requests unanimous consent that the bills remaining on today's third reading of Senate bills calendar be carried over to their proper place on Thursday, June 18th, 2009. Third reading of Senate bills calendar. Without objection? Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Other business of the House, other business of the Senate. Orders of the day have been completed. Announcements. Representative Kotek.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The two Ways and Means subcommittees that are meeting at 1 will now meet at 1:30. That's Human Services and Natural Resources. Meeting at 1:30. Thank you.
Further announcements. Representative Hanna.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Republicans, please get your lunch and come back to the caucus room and join us. Committees will not start until 1:30.
Representative Nolan.
Mr. Speaker, colleagues, it is a gorgeous chamber, and I appreciate the opportunity to have spent an extra 45 minutes in it today. But now I'd like to invite the House Democrats to join me in a drab meeting room for caucus. Please get your lunches and join me there.
Messages from the Senate.
Mr. Speaker, I'm directed by the President to inform you the Senate has passed House Bills 2004, Senate Bill 5501, 5510, 5531, 5533, 5540, 79, 91, 158, 161, 529, 546, 700, 772, 778. Passed the following House bills as amended by the Senate. House Bill 3271 and 2604. Concurred in House amendments repassed in Bills 241 and 963. Conferees announced for House Bill 3089, Senators Dingfelder, Boquist, and Przanski.
Remonstrances. Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Please don't stop for this. Go on to your lunches. Mr. Speaker, I remember a lady once saying to me, Vic, we know you're a pig, but please, don't be a hog. And I'm not sure when she said that. It might have been when I cut in front of her in line at a buffet. But it came back to me the other day when I was thinking about hydrogen hubs and the RPS, as I know it probably does to you. Now, hydrogen hubs, you'll remember, is that safe and renewable energy concept that I've talked about many times that brings two very real experimental technologies together, allows us to cheaply crack hydrogen out of water, store it safely at any size at the center of load in our vast grid, and strangely enough, we store it in green or anhydrous ammonia, which is richer in hydrogen molecules than liquid hydrogen itself. When energy prices and demand spike, for instance, in August, you take it and you burn it 100% cleanly, and it supplements your primary source of generation. That could be hydroelectric, it could be wind, solar, you name it. And you do that until prices and demand come down. Now, it's not the same angle of renewable energy that we hear about. It's not the end all. It's not better than yours, whether you're interested in wind, wave harnessing, Choffler floor speeches. It simply has implications for all these. The river doesn't run precisely when we want it to, nor do the turbines turn when we have our demand for energy. The sun doesn't shine on a schedule. So how do you capture and regenerate energy when you need it? And that the answer for me is to just store it, and that's what hydrogen technology is all about. This technology will benefit all the others. Strengthen what you have. Even out renewable resources and put Oregon first with a strategy of regional preference that resists the fight, the greed to become an energy farm for California. We're in our last days, and RPS may be dividing Oregonians who should be uniting. There's a bill. It sailed through our house, and it's stuck somewhere on the other side. And it's all about a fight over the RPS, which it should not be. Hydrogen hubs will go forward without an RPS inclusion. But let's keep our eye on the larger goal, of a recovered economy with energy produced right here in Oregon for Oregon businesses and for Oregonians. Our environmental community needs to take a step back and remember the lady's advice that I mentioned at the beginning of this remonstrance. You may be a pig, but you don't have to be a hog. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm sorry, I didn't realize it had changed during my remonstrance.
Thank you, Representative. Further remonstrances. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. It was last Thursday that I stood and spoke about the great sadness coming from the campaign when $600,000 was spent against me, my marriage was assailed, lies were shared about my wife and about my motives and actions. Hurtful things. And frankly, I thank you for your indulgence then and now, because that catharsis helps a bit. I do want to take a moment and thank the two very brave gentlemen who stood and shared their hearts. That was very meaningful and much appreciated. And I appreciate the four or five people who came to look at these devolved brochures that I suspect represents our futures. And a number of people who patted me on the back or had comments. I appreciate that. And I guess this morning I wanted to share an additional factor. This isn't a Democrat or a Republican issue. In fact, apparently there are Republicans who want me to shut up because they're relishing the tax votes. But they forget that when exaggeration and lying is the new devolved standard, it really doesn't matter how you voted or why you voted or what your vote actually means, because you have the right to distort it. We ought to think about that. And I encourage you to think about whether the land is trust, whether there is trust in the land and safety before you beat your campaign swords into plows. I'd encourage those of you who haven't to come and look at these devolved brochures. I suspect they represent all of our fortunes. If we don't decide to change the standards and change the way we campaign and behave towards one another, I thank you for this second indulgence.
Thank you. Further remonstrances, Representative Jefferson Smith.
Thanks, Madam Speaker. I'm with Kettimer.
Thank you. Further remonstrances? Seeing none. Adjournment. Representative Tomei. Representative Jensen, 9:45 a.m., Thursday, June 18th, 2009.
Can I stretch that out so we can spend just a few more seconds here in the building, in the room?
I think everyone would be very grateful if you did.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Speaker, I move the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. Thursday, June 18th, 2009.
Representative Jensen moves the House adjourn until 9:45 a.m. Thursday, June 18th, 2009. Without objection, the House is adjourned.